This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The U.S. may be on the verge of fighting a desert war. My guest, Artyom Borovik, is a journalist who covered the Soviet desert war in Afghanistan. The Soviets went in without understanding what fighting in the desert would be like, just as Americans went into Vietnam poorly prepared to fight a long jungle war. Borovik made his first trip to Afghanistan in 1980, the second year of the war. His last trip was in 1989 to watch the withdrawal of Soviet troops. Borovik spent time in combat with the troops. His first-hand accounts of the fighting were published in Ogonek, the first Soviet magazine to really reflect the new openness in the Soviet Union in the late 1980s. His report stayed away from ideology and focused on the pain, doubt, and disorientation of war. He's expanded on those accounts in his new book, The Hidden War. Borovik now hosts a TV show, which he describes as the Soviet version of 60 Minutes. He also reports for Nightline here in the U.S. I asked him if there were any lessons the Soviets learned about fighting a desert war that he thinks Americans should know.
The Soviet Union was preparing itself for a global war like the Third World War, and for a war in Europe, and thought of itself as great superpower. And we thought we will come in Afghanistan and win the war immediately in 2 or 3 days. We thought we'd need maximum 2 weeks to win the war and to support the regime, the Babrak Karmal regime there. But it turned out that we fought in Afghanistan for about 9 years, and this war was deadly and destructful not only for Afghanistan but for the Soviet Union. And sometimes it seems to me that this war is now has crossed the border with the army that was withdrawn from Afghanistan and now going on inside the Soviet Union, as national unrest, as crime, as chaos, economic chaos, and so on. We came to Afghanistan not really knowing what a war in the desert is like. We were not prepared for it. From the medical point of view, from the point of view of arms, from the point of view of ammunition. Well, for example, let's start from the boots that that soldiers have. When sand gets into these boots, in a couple of minutes, the leg is a mess, is a mixture of blood and meat. You cannot untie these boots all the time because it will make your unit weight you, and this is risky. It means that risky for the whole unit. So you keep on walking, and your legs start bleeding. Then you will find out in the Gulf that soldiers, American Rangers, will prefer fighting in sneakers, Adidas or Nike sneakers, because it's much easier to fight in it. You can take it off in 1 second and put it on. It doesn't take too long to untie it and to put it on. So Soviet Spetsnaz forces were fighting in Afghanistan in the desert in sneakers. This was a very funny and strange situation.
What else did you learn about outfitting? Yeah.
Helmets are not good for the desert because in a helmet like your soldiers have and like a helmet like Soviet soldiers have, they look alike. You're in a desert under a strong sun, hot sun. Your head becomes like a hot teapot in about 15 minutes. So you throw away the helmet and you don't have the Panama. Not everybody has the Panama. So this is another problem. You will find out in the desert, as we have found out in Afghanistan, that sunstroke is the worst enemy, even worse than Iraqi soldiers, probably. It will knock out probably 10% or up to 12% of the units. The problem of water. It's easy to supply units with water when they are simply stationed there, but it'll be pretty difficult to do it during the war. Now, one canteen is not enough. Two canteen is not enough. So soldiers, it will be a big problem. Maps in a desert, they don't work because there's no marks. A lot of units will be lost and won't be able to identify themselves. Aviation will sometimes drop bombs and bomb their own American units because sometimes it's very hard to detect who is the enemy and where is your unit?
Did you find that a lot of Soviet soldiers experienced extreme disorientation because they were so unused to the desert climate?
I think in a way, yes. Besides, you see, a person becomes very weak in a in a desert in about 2 weeks or 4 weeks in a month, because he sweats a lot. And with sweat, a lot of minerals and salts, important salts, leave human body. And they are very important for the body. And it took Soviet military doctors to invent, you know, special salt tablets. It took him 5 years probably to invent them and put them into the canteens, into the water, to compensate the losses of these important salts and minerals. So these kind of things, you see, these kind of things will play a very important role. Right now, you might think of them as not important, but then during war, they will play a very, very important role. And a lot of other things. Uniform is not very good. 50% of it is nylon in a desert. Nylon is not very good. So you will see all this.
Did the Soviet Army have any problems with sand getting into the arms, you know, getting into guns
oh,
and tanks and so on?
Oh, this is a serious problem, yes. This is a very serious problem. You see, when M16 is a very good weapon, but if there's sand in it, it won't fire the way it should fire. From this point of view, AK Kalashnikov, that the main weapon the Soviet soldiers have, is a little bit better, because even if it's dirty, even if it's all in mud, it still can fire well enough. M16, from this point of view, it's got to be clean. And unfortunately, you cannot guarantee that in the desert. The same thing will happen with the soldier's eyes. We came into Afghanistan not thinking that we should give to every single soldier sunglasses to protect their eyes. You see, sun is very heavy there, very strong. And there is irritation of eyes immediately because of the sun and because of the sand. Sand is everywhere. Sand is in the air. And your eyes are red after 2 days you're in the desert, especially during war, where, you know, you're not in your camp every day. You're sometimes in a marsh for a few days, and things are extremely, extremely difficult during war. So America will experience all that very, very soon. Although I hope it will avoid it. I hope American military did think about all these things beforehand.
Now, one of the things you report in your
Terry,
book...
Terry, I wanted to add something. Sometimes the enemy will play serious tricks on you. And, for example, I remember in Afghanistan, we were following a unit of the rebels, and we were probably 500 meters were between us and the rebels. And suddenly the rebel unit disappeared, and we just couldn't find it. The helicopters were trying to find them. They disappeared. What happened is they... Each rebel lay down on the desert, and there was a heavy, very heavy wind. And in about 3 minutes, they were all covered with sand. You couldn't see them. They had straws in their mouths that they could breathe, but you couldn't see them. Things like that you will find they will use things like that in a desert war.
My guest is Soviet journalist Artyom Borovik, and he covered the Soviet war in Afghanistan for the Soviet journal Ogonyuk, and he now co-anchors a weekly TV news show in the Soviet Union and is the editor of a magazine called Top Secret. He also reports for Nightline here in the United States, and he's written a book on covering the Soviet war in Afghanistan called The Hidden War. How do you think the long war the Soviets fought in Afghanistan is now affecting popular opinion about a possible war in the Gulf?
Well, you see, the war in Afghanistan for us was our Vietnam. And we had this Afghan syndrome right after the war. And I think it's very hard for you, Terry, to imagine America sending its troops to the Gulf in 1974 or 1975. Would you agree with that? The same thing happening in the Soviet Union. There's a very strong popular idea that we should not send our boys abroad. As a matter of fact, our boys are now fighting inside the Soviet Union. They are in Azerbaijan, they are in Armenia, they are in the Baltics right now. The war is going on full scale inside the Soviet Union. The nation is not ready to fight a war, another war, in the East or anywhere abroad. And this will probably be this way for the next few years. The conservative press and the conservatives are against Gorbachev supporting the coalition. The Soviet military, traditionally see Iraq as their ally rather than Kuwait. Besides, we have a lot of Muslims inside the Soviet Union. I'm talking about Azerbaijanis. I'm talking about all those Central Asian republics that we have, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and others. They are all Muslims, more than 20% of the Soviet population, and they all are supporting Saddam Hussein. Now, they are in favor of him. And now imagine the Soviet Union falls apart tomorrow. What will these republics do? Will they support the coalition or they will support Saddam Hussein? I'm afraid they will support Saddam Hussein. So the situation is very, very complicated. It's very difficult inside the Soviet Union. And I've seen a lot of... I'm an anchor for a TV program called Sklyat, translated Point of View, which is the Soviet version of American 60 Minutes. And I have interviewed people in Uzbekistan, the Muslims, and they are, at least 10 of them were ready to go and fight on the side of Saddam Hussein. Nobody of them wanted to join the coalition.
So you think that the Soviet Union is too busy being at war with itself to really fight a war outside?
Right now, yes. Soviet Union is too busy preoccupied with the situation inside. The Gulf does not occupy an important place on the front pages of Soviet newspapers. When there's a deficit of bread, deficit of meat, deficit of everything, shortages, lines in the stores, people are more preoccupied with what's going on in their own home rather than what's going on in the Gulf, as long as Soviet forces and Russian boys are not there.
Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more.
Okay,
my guest is Soviet journalist Artem Borovik. And he covered the war in Afghanistan for the Soviet journal Oganyuk. He also co-anchors a weekly TV news show in the Soviet Union and is the editor of a magazine called Top Secret. His new book is about covering the Soviet war in Afghanistan. It's called The Hidden War. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Soviet journalist Artem Borovik is my guest. Do you think that any of the freedoms that journalists in the Soviet Union won under Glasnost are in jeopardy now?
I think that the empire is now striking back. Bureaucrats, the party, communists, the military, they have lost almost everything, and now they're fighting back. They're trying to, again, take control over the press, over television, and I would say that it's much easier for them to control television, because the television is still under government control and is state-owned. A lot of newspapers, for example, Oganyuk, are independent, but the television is still controlled by the government. If the authorities want to destroy a Soviet parliament, they don't have to destroy the parliament itself. They should stop TV transmission of the debates in the parliament. And this is equal to killing the parliament, because the Soviet public won't know what's going on there. What are the people talking about? What are the senators and congressmen talking about? My TV show was closed on the eve of the new year because we invited the foreign minister Shevardnadze after his resignation to our studio and wanted to make a big interview with him. The next program was also closed. So I must tell you that the fight continues, and the one who thinks that Perestroika has won and there's freedom of press forever in the Soviet Union, he makes a mistake. Soviet journalists have to fight for what they have achieved, for their freedom, every day with their every article. And especially Soviet journalists who were covering the war in Afghanistan experienced that. This is why the war in Afghanistan for a lot of Soviets is still a hidden war. A lot of people don't know the truth about this war. This is why I called my book The Hidden War. Now the situation has changed. Now, from the Baltics, for example, Soviet reporters give good information, truthful information. But, again, it's not guaranteed that it will last. This process might be stopped any minute and or any second. Everything is not stable there.
When you were covering the Soviet war in Afghanistan, what was the official Soviet journalism like?
Well, if you thumb through, if you take a look at the newspapers and the magazines of the early 80s, the war started in 1979 in December, you would get an opinion that Soviets were guarding caravans, that they were serving only as advisors, that they were building schools and kindergartens, as if they were not participating in heavy fighting. It insulted even the soldiers themselves, who returned from Afghanistan injured and with medals, and the people in buses and metro and the subways would ask, why did you put the medals on? You didn't deserve them. You were having nice time there in Afghanistan. The people knew nothing about the war in Afghanistan. This is what differs Afghanistan from the war America had in Vietnam, which was called even a war in the dining room, when, as you remember, Walter Cronkite and all other American reporters, Dan Rather, Ted Koppel, and others reported from Afghanistan, reported from Vietnam, giving America a very truthful information about what was going on, about the casualties and everything. Gorbachev risked to tell the Soviet public how many people we've lost in Afghanistan only after the war was over, and it ended February the 15th, 1989. So during the war, we were not able to inform the Soviet public about what was going there, about our boys dying there. And this is why Soviet journalists were not able to create an anti-war movement in the Soviet Union that would pressure the government, that would make the government stop the war in Afghanistan. The nation still knows very little about the war in Afghanistan. The story about this war is to be told to the Soviet public.
What are some of the things that you feel you were able to tell in your reporting that wasn't being told?
You see, for the first time I came to Afghanistan in 1986, and my work there as a war correspondent coincided with the beginning of Gorbachev's spring, of glasnost, of outspokenness. And I've been able to tell much more than my predecessors, than the previous generation who was working in Afghanistan as war correspondents. Those guys sometimes thought, why should I go to a battle, to combat, participate with the soldiers and see all that and write about it, risk my life, if back there in Moscow, my editor won't publish it? I had an agreement with my editor-in-chief of my magazine that he will publish 100% of what I see. And he really did. And I think my magazine gave much more truthful information about the war. And although even in 1989, when I was reporting about the final days of the war, I had serious problems with Soviet censorship.
I've always heard that people in the Soviet Union have been very wary about speaking openly to the press. I'm wondering, when you were in Afghanistan, how open the soldiers were with you, and if they trusted you, if they thought maybe you were an agent of some sort, or that by speaking to you, they or their families could be hurt?
In the beginning, in 1986, they did not trust me. They did not respect me because they did not respect journalists who were writing lies from Afghanistan. Then they thought that I am probably another one of those journalists who will write, you know, romantic stuff from Afghanistan and lie to the public about them. And I had to be with them, go with them into combat to prove that I can go through the same difficulties and hardships as they did. And only then they would start talking. when Aganyak in those days in 1987 was not the famous Aganyak of today. When I came in 1989 as a correspondent of Aganyak, the military treated me as if I was the enemy and not the rebels. And it was very hard for me to speak to the soldiers without being accompanied by some political officer. We have such a something like public affairs officer who followed me all the time, and certainly soldiers were afraid to speak, but I managed to get away from the control of the political officers and was lost in the midst of the war, and then is when real journalism started. This is when I could see and hear the truth.
So the officers distrusted you, but the soldiers trusted you more.
Yes, it depends what officers, but generally the staff in Kabul, the commanders, they kind of thought that I cannot be trusted. They thought that I'm sort of a, you know, provocative journalist that will, you know, cause trouble for them, write about things they wouldn't like the public to know. But the soldiers wanted to tell me all that because they wanted the nation to know what about all those terrible things that we were doing in Afghanistan and about the low morale in the army and so on.
When Soviet Foreign Minister Edward Shevardnadze resigned, he said that he thought the Soviet Union was moving toward a dictatorship. Do you think that that's an overstatement or do you agree?
Well, I think that the Soviet Union is moving towards a more conservative path, more right path. At the same time, this statement made by Mr. Shevardnadze made a lot of people smile because Mr. Shevardnadze himself, 5 years ago, was a dictator and he had an enormous amount of power. He was the first secretary of the Communist Party of Georgia. Believe me, he had all the power he needed. Not every king has had such a power as Mr. Shevardnadze did. But this man played a very important role in the years of perestroika. And I think that he really is a strong supporter of the ideas of perestroika now. And I'm afraid that the country is moving towards right, towards conservatism. And this is very dangerous. Unfortunately, you see, in the eyes of the millions, the ideas of perestroika, the ideas of democracy, of liberty, are associated in the people's minds with chaos, with food deficit, with shortages of everything, with lines in the streets and in the stores, with the crime in the streets, with national unrest, with war that is going on in Armenia, in Moldavia, in other republics now, probably in the Baltics. So a lot of people think better that it's better to have bread and order than to have free press, freedom, and democracy. And as Benjamin Franklin said one day, I don't remember the very phrase, but I am sure that the essence is right. He said that if a nation that is ready to exchange freedom for bread and order in the final end, does not deserve democracy, freedom, and bread and order.
My guest has been Soviet journalist Artyom Borovik. His book on the Soviet war in Afghanistan is called The Hidden War. Borovik can occasionally be seen reporting for Nightline. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.